Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. I'm Dalton Erwig. And on the phone right now, very much farther than 6 feet away from me, Corey LaBounty. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Good evening, Dalton. Always a pleasure to join you on Monday nights, brother. And it's been amazing here within this last month and a half with actually no sport events going on that you and I still have a plethora of topics to talk about.
Yeah, I know. We were going over before the show started, since we're socially distant right now, kind of what's on the menu for tonight. And we've got plenty to talk about with the NFL draft coming up later this week, which, what a blessing. I know a lot of people were upset with the NFL, which, what's new? It seems like they stay angry with the NFL, but a lot of people were angry that the NFL was going through with this virtual draft that they've got coming up later this week. And I'm so thankful for it. In a world without live sports, this will give us something to talk about for at least, I don't know, another month, another 2 months, until we can start getting golfers back out there on the course, NASCAR drivers, maybe restart the NBA and NHL season. So I am excited about the NFL draft coming up. There was the WNBA draft this last weekend, which I'm not sure how many people tuned in for that. Personally, I tuned in for the first pick, maybe stayed until the second pick, and that was it for me. But I was kind of considering that a good run-through for what a virtual draft may look like as we lead into this NFL draft coming up later this week.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dalton. I mean, again, you're looking at a virtual draft. Of course, the WNBA only has three rounds, and because of it, it was interesting to see, you know, where they're going to do and how many live shots they were going to go to. Was it going to be the entire first round of 12 or 13 young ladies who were selected in the WNBA draft? But it gives kind of a template for the commissioners to kind of communicate with one another, because I know they're all in this together in regards to the NBA draft possibly not being live here sometime, that may be bumped back beyond the end of summertime. But definitely the NFL draft kind of gives you a carbon copy on what works and what does not work.
Yeah, and we'll see that later this week. And also today, the NFL held a mock draft with all 32 teams, and we'll get into how that went or didn't go later. But so much of this is, I know, reminding a lot of people of their fantasy football drafts that they have every single year, and the mock drafts that take place before the actual fantasy draft. And that's probably about where the comparisons end, because we're talking about a lot of money and a lot of jobs that are on the line with the NFL draft. So hopefully things go smoother for them later this week than they do for most people in their fantasy drafts. But the other huge thing that it seemed like everyone that loves sports, or most people that love sports, was talking about this weekend was the debut of the 10-part documentary series on ESPN. I don't know if it falls, I think it does fall under the 30 for 30 umbrella of documentaries that ESPN releases, but the biggest one yet, The Last Dance, about the Chicago Bulls, that very last title season, the 97-98 season with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Rodman, everybody, Steve Kerr, you know, the names we all know that were on that Chicago Bulls team. And so I was watching that last night. I had to watch the final 30 minutes of the second part today because I fell asleep a little bit early before the storms woke me up again last night. I know you were watching it, Corey. My only question, were you watching the unedited version on ESPN, or did you watch the TV 14 version on ESPN2 with the edits?
I had to watch the unedited version.
Yep.
I mean, you wanted to get the realest and the dillest. And they gave kind of a warning about it, that there was going to be some explicit language in there. But, you know, F-bombs were officially dropped on ESPN.
Yes.
And if you didn't like it, like you said, you could tune in to ESPN2. But they just spoke from the heart. And it was an unedited version of what went down in that 97-98 season, and I thought it was fantastically done. They could have run all 10 episodes, Dalton, and I would have stayed up as long as it would have taken, but there was some great backdrops. Jason Caffey, who's a Davidson Warrior graduate, played on a World Championship team with the Chicago Bulls and was traded during that season. And it goes to show the management issues and problems that were there and evident. But it was just great to see Jason Caffey on some of that great vintage footage. But, again, a great documentary last night.
One and two. And I'm glad that they didn't go ahead and air all 10 parts. They aired the first two parts because I was out after the first hour and a half. I wanted to stay awake, but that's just not what I do anymore. I'm officially an old man now. I just fall asleep. But the cool thing I thought about it with so many, you know, with so few, with zero live sports going on right now, there's nothing that people are really getting online or talk with their friends about in real time. And this was something that, you know, it debuted at the same time for everyone. So it was almost like its own live sporting event last night, getting to kind of comment and see what everyone else's comments were about The Last Dance. And so many people, you know, are viewing this Chicago Bulls team through different lenses. And just take me and you, for instance. You were a teenager during those years, maybe a little bit older than I was born in 91, so the Bulls won, I guess, six of the first eight championships in my lifetime. so they were a dominant program.
Yeah. I mean, the most dominant and most recognized probably team on the planet. I mean, you always hear about the Cowboys and the Yankees, but during the 90s, the Chicago Bulls was where it was at. I mean, the dominance that Michael Jordan demanded, and to win three world championships in different scenarios, you know, go on the baseball hiatus and come back and then win another three consecutive, you just don't see that type of dominance. And then when you start looking behind the scenes about what happened, Dalton, that's why last night over 6 million people were viewing this last night. And it's not a contest of who is greater or diminishing LeBron James or Kobe Bryant's legacy, because LeBron and Kobe are both great. But when you ask them who their role model is, who they modeled their game after, it's the one and only Michael Jordan. And to me, anytime, you know, for this generation to say, okay, Kobe was the best I saw, LeBron was the best I saw, but for those guys to admit, hey, look, Michael Jordan's the best I've ever seen, there ends the discussion right there.
Yeah, and the number you said, 6.1 million, that's the same number of people that watched the first round of the NFL draft last year. So that's how popular this program was last night. And with the different generations that are watching, like, for instance, I've been a LeBron guy. He came around during my teenage years of watching sports. That's when LeBron was huge. And it was like that for so many people with Kobe. It was like that for so many people with Michael Jordan, that I think just when you grow up, whatever your generation, whoever that superstar is, you're most likely to kind of default to them as the best player in the world. And even people that probably didn't get to watch much of Michael Jordan because they were so young or not even born, like I saw Trae Young, you know, the point guard for Atlanta, he was tweeting about this last night. He said he might have to move MJ to his number one. I don't know if he had Kobe or LeBron or Magic at number one before that, but now after watching that, and I kind of feel the same way, watching Michael Jordan play during this documentary, he put it all out there on the line every single game, kind of like Kobe did. And I'm not sure that we see that as much with LeBron or really any of the players in this era we're in right now.
Just the ultimate competitor. I mean, would push his teammates to become better, and that's the thing he demanded. He demanded you be great. And for him to sit and say, look, you know, I'm not going to play for anyone but Phil Jackson. You know, you go back and you look at the beginning of Michael Jordan's career and the coaches that he had to go through. I really thought growing up, I thought Doug Collins would be able to take Michael Jordan to that championship. And Phil Jackson was the assistant coach to Doug Collins at the time before Phil got the job. And when Phil got the job, of course, his first year they go on to defeat the Detroit Pistons and the Los Angeles Lakers to win their first ever world championship. But I think that this documentary will continue to woo fans because people know about the Air Jordan, the Jumpman 23 brand as just a product, never really having an opportunity besides YouTube in them. And most kids nowadays don't want to YouTube Michael Jordan. They want to see the latest and the greatest. But here's the ultimate innovator of Michael Jordan. And this younger generation having an opportunity to see why he's called the GOAT is great.
Yeah. There were a lot of things that I learned about last night. I knew Jerry Krause's name, and I knew he passed away a couple years ago. I didn't realize how instrumental he was, which I should have known, in building this team as the general manager. But in the eyes of this documentary, he really is the villain in this. I guess my one issue is that you're not going to get any, you know, return volley from Jerry Krause because he passed away a couple years ago. So you're not going to get his side of the story in this, and it kind of seemed like a pile on. But how about Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen just, I mean, relentlessly going after this guy? They were antagonizing him, making fun of him. And in Scottie Pippen's case, he really felt that Krause was out to, you know, ruin his career. I mean, Pippen signed, and they made a big deal about this in that in the show last night. But he signed maybe one of the worst contracts there's been. I think it was, what, 5 or 7 years for $18 million?
Yeah, 6 year, $18 million contract, dog.
Yeah, and he said that his importance, or the reason that he signed that, is that he wanted to make sure that he had some money in his pocket. And when they told the story of Scottie Pippen and how his dad had a stroke and was confined to a wheelchair for the rest of his life, and that one of his older brothers, I think, was in an accident, also had to live in a wheelchair, and how he wanted that money to go towards his family. But he ended up making up for it, because after the Bulls' heyday, he went on to sign more contracts. I think he ended up making more money during his career on the court than Jordan did. Now, different story with sponsorships and the Jordan shoe line and everything after that, but Pippen made out all right. I just didn't know that he was the sixth highest paid player on his team during that final year. Crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely a tremendous issue, and I thought the documentary did a great job shining light on that, that probably the second greatest basketball player on the planet was the sixth highest paid player on his team. And that was amazing, and Scottie Pippen did bring a lot of that on himself, taking that guaranteed money. But at the same time, the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, could have gone back and renegotiated his contract, but he was a shrewd businessman, and he's not a billionaire for not making good business decisions. And you know, he told Scottie, don't sign that contract, or if I were you, right, I would not sign this contract. But Scottie, at the same time, didn't want to turn away that guaranteed money and having the back injuries that he had. It's just a great, great documentary. Right. When you talk about all the stories and all the characters and everything that was involved, Dalton, that's what makes the Chicago Bulls run so special.
And by the way, you know, Reisdorf, or however you say his last name, he came out looking pretty good after those first 2 hours, but he had, as the owner, he had the power to overrule Krause. He could have made sure if Phil Jackson wanted to come back, he could have signed him again. He could have given Pippen a better contract, but like you said, business is business. I did find, do you know who Scottie Pippen's agent was when he signed that contract?
I know it couldn't have been David Falk.
Jimmy Sexton. The agent for, I think, pretty much all of the SEC coaches now, a big-time college football coach agent. He was actually Scottie Pippen's agent when he signed that 6-year, $18 million deal. So I thought that was interesting. A couple other interesting things, and then we'll get off this and get into the draft here in just a minute. But some of the smaller stories in that, like the traveling cocaine circus, what they called the Chicago team before Jordan got there, and some of the stories about at that time, Jordan was all basketball all the time, didn't even drink, wasn't doing any drugs, and he seemed disgusted at times when they were talking about the team that he was drafted into and how they'd like to party so much. But I really liked the story about when Pippen came in, and Pippen said that MJ got him a set of golf clubs, and he's like, wow, what a nice thing for Michael Jordan to do. And he said, yeah, it turns out he was just kind of laying the groundwork to eventually take all my money out there on the course. So I thought those were a couple cool moments. And one interesting thing that we don't see as much of anymore, at one point going into that 97-98 season that this documentary is about, they showed in the locker room after one of the early games, and the press that had surrounded Jordan, and there were so many microphones so close to MJ's face that I was feeling claustrophobic in that shot. I don't know if audio has just improved that much since then, but we don't really see that as much anymore. The press gives him a little bit more space, and probably after we make it out of this coronavirus thing, everyone will be much further away than they were last night. That was intense when they were all so close to MJ.
And you know, it's one of the reasons that Michael Jordan, people sometimes said, hey, look, he was a butthole toward the media, but it's a situation when you have 25 microphones in your face at all times and sometimes accidentally poking you in the face because you have your microphone too close to him trying to get that comment, he just would stop talking and walk away.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I commend him for that. But again, like you said, Dalton, audio has come a long way, but everybody wanted a piece of Michael Jordan. Everybody wanted to talk to him. And I look forward to these next 7 or 8 episodes that we have looked forward to every Sunday starting at 8 o'clock.
Amen. I'm looking forward to it also. Coming up, we'll talk about some of the updates to league schedules, when we might see some teams back out there on the field, and also we'll get into this NFL draft in detail. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. And as we go now, month and a half without live sports, you know, Corey, so we've got Mobile Mornings, 6 to 9 a.m. every morning with me and Sean Sullivan and staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. And I've been able to do, you know, some sports news every single morning. That hasn't dried up until today. It was so difficult today, just not a whole lot of sports news out there. And I think we're actually finding out how long you can go without sports before you start to not have sports stories anymore. The good news is that the draft is coming up later this week, so we'll have plenty to talk about for the upcoming weeks. But, man, things are getting dry out there.
Yeah, it's a situation to where with the Thursday night NFL draft, I mean, there's been speculation since the Senior Bowl as to who's going to pick in what slot, who's going to trade up, who's going to trade down, and that was prior to the coronavirus being an issue and a pandemic, and you know, across the globe. And now, when you're dealing with that coronavirus situation, it creates the template to where you have these mock drafts and simulations that have been done now, Dalton, and the trials with technology, because you have everybody trying to be able to communicate. But it does make for great storylines after Thursday about the possible comings and goings and who's getting traded and who's getting cut. So that gives you plenty to banter about for sure.
Yeah, and we're in the heat right now of rumor season. I don't know, you know, you've got all these sports journalists, and it starts at the top with Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter, who seem to always get the news out first because they're the most well-connected. But then you go down the line, and all these journalists who talk with people from different front offices, and a lot of them at this point are used as tools going into the draft. They want to throw smoke screens out there to maybe throw some teams off the scent of who they might be interested in picking, or make one pick look more valuable than the next so they can get more in return if they decide to trade it. And then when you add in this whole, you know, GMs won't even be in the same rooms as the head coaches, who won't be in the same rooms as the top scouts. And that's something I'm looking forward to talking with the executive director of the Senior Bowl next week, Jim Nagy. We'll get a draft recap and have him on the show. But it makes this so much more interesting. And we were talking a little bit earlier about the WNBA draft over the weekend, which I'm sure it didn't even pull a fraction of the viewers that the Michael Jordan documentary did last night, but still a pretty big deal for this virtual draft, because they're going to be the first to hold one over the weekend. And, you know, Sabrina Ionescu, everyone knew she was going to go first, and she did go first overall to the New York Liberty. But what I was paying attention to was this remoting in and hearing from her and having her interviewed after being picked, because we're going to see this same thing starting Thursday night when Joe Burrow is taken first overall by Cincinnati. And it actually was not a good start for the WNBA. I know that Ionescu's connection was pretty bad. It was kind of spotty, and it was looking like this whole virtual draft was just not going to work out. But I think after that, it started to go pretty well. They showed some of the ensuing draft picks from their homes and getting hugs from their families, and you kind of got some good insight into that. I also thought it was cool they honored Kobe Bryant's daughter and the teammates on her team that were in that hospital wreck that ended up fatal. You know, 9 died in that accident, but WNBA had Gianna Bryant, Alyssa Altobelli, and Peyton Chester. They were honorary draft picks in their draft, so I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, it's a tip of the cap to those, and I agree with you, Dalton, to be able to acknowledge those who lost their life in that horrific helicopter crash, to know that Kobe Bryant's daughter and the rest of the young ladies who perished wanted to be in the WNBA one day. And I think that's just a great way to recognize those young ladies. But at the same time, Dalton, when you look at the poor connections that were there, that was just one-on-one. I think what's going to be better viewing, it's not the draft itself, because, of course, you know, you want to know what team is going to select what player. I think the reactions and the aftermath of the footage that's going to be available is going to be better than the draft itself.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion about it, because you're going to be able to capture so much emotion. Your connections are going to be better once you have the equipment, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I read to where the NFL sent high-tech cameras and lights to all the top picks that will be are possibly selected in the first round, and if you're not, you know, they'll still be able to catch that reaction of you continuing to wait, not in the green room this time, but in your living room, waiting to be selected, which is an interesting thought. I think the footage there, the post-draft footage, is going to be better than the draft footage that's actually going to be live.
Yeah, so here's the breakdown, and I'll see how much of this I can get into before we hit the news, but there were 58 draft prospects, and the NFL sent these 58 prospects, I think, two separate cameras, and they prepped them on this last week. They kind of broke them down into groups and went over the technology, but 58 draft prospects in 58 different homes. They sent them each two light stands to get the lighting right, two Verizon cell phones. You know, NFL and Verizon have that big deal, and those are going to act as cameras. One is going to be on throughout the entire draft, or at least until after they get picked, so who knows what kind of, you know, moments might become clickbait after all of that, if anybody's filmed doing something they don't want to be seen doing. They said they sent a sensitive mic to each of them and also some headphones so they can do these interviews. But that's only 58 of the 130 total studios that they've got going out. 32 GMs, 32 coaches will each have the same thing. And then you've got all these ESPN hosts. And then one control room, but they're going to be flipping between all these to provide the broadcast on draft night. It'll be certainly fascinating to watch. They had a mock draft today. I'll let you know how well or not well that went when we get back. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. You know, Corey, as we wait to see the leagues of all the different sports decide when they're going to start trying to get their seasons started or restarted, pretty good write-up today from the Associated Press where they talked with decision-makers for all the different leagues. I think they said they talked to at least 30 to kind of get a temperature for when we might see different sports reopen, or at least what contingency plans they've been making. By my, you know, reading around the stories, I think UFC will be first back on May the 9th. That's if you don't include WWE, who was able to still hold an event. Was it WrestleMania they had a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Without fans in attendance. But the UFC, who actually were planning to hold an event this last weekend, April 18th, they were supposed to hold one. It was going to be, I think, in Brooklyn, and they ended up changing their plans to trying to host it on tribal land in California, which, you know, would not be having to follow state or federal law. But then there ended up being enough pressure put on Dana White and the UFC from their higher-ups with ESPN and ABC that he called that off. But he does say they're going to try to get some fights in on May the 9th, and it looks like that might actually happen in Florida because the governor there, DeSantis, he's making some sports essential in order to get some leagues down there. But then after that, I think NASCAR, they said that they're going to resume their season May 24th. I think they sent out a memo privately to some of the NASCAR teams, or all the NASCAR teams. They're going to try to get started on May 24th in Charlotte, and that race and probably a few races after that will be held without fans in attendance. NASCAR still says they want to hold all 36 Cup Series races, which means we're going to see some weekday races, and they're also going to have some double headers, which I think I don't see how they could have a race back-to-back on the same day. Maybe they mean within a couple days of each other they're going to have races, but NASCAR still plans to get all of their races in. The PGA Tour, they announced that they're going to try to get started back in mid-June, and then they took all of their events, or as many as they could, and reworked them into this new schedule. So we're actually going to see some major tournaments in August and then run that all the way through the Masters in November, which would be really interesting to see what Augusta looks like in the fall and have these players out there. So that covers UFC, NASCAR, and PGA Tour. As far as the leagues that had to stop pretty much mid-season or near postseason, the NBA said they've been making a lot of different contingency plans, and right now they're trying to decide how they're going to resume the season. They're not planning on canceling the season, but I've seen a lot of different possibilities thrown out there, including having maybe just the postseason or most of the league, including those that are kind of in contention for a playoff spot, and putting them all in one location, maybe even in Las Vegas, having them quarantined, staying in hotels, being tested, and try to round out the regular season in one neutral location and then have the playoffs there. Maybe a shorter series. You have five-game series all the way through. What's your take on that? How would you like to see the NBA finish this season?
I think it's a situation to where if the NBA is able to come back, you have to give those great athletes at least a month to go ahead and have like a basic preseason again. And as far as quarantining them in one location, similar to what Major League Baseball is talking about, I don't think that that's possible. I think that there's a better opportunity to play in front of empty arenas with no fans versus isolating them in one location, Dalton. And if you are going to resume the NBA, again, at least a month of some type of preseason or whatever you want to call it,
training
preseason or pre-postseason conditioning to get some games in, because, again, you already know some teams are already eliminated from playoff contention. So I think that, you know, you may look at shortening some of the series. Instead of going best of seven, you may have to go best of five in some situations.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you definitely want to go ahead from a gambling and betting standpoint. You definitely want some type of NBA or MLB action to take place.
Right.
Other than horse betting, UFC fighting going on, you want there to be major sports that are going to happen. But I just think that what you would definitely have to do is you would have to find a way to go ahead, once you get the athletes back into shape, and as far as the NBA is concerned, go ahead and shorten the rest of the regular season and then shorten your series.
Yeah, and it's so similar. The NBA and NHL, they had to end their seasons at similar points going into the playoffs, and both will need to get their legs back under them. They're both going to need some kind of training camp or extended practice schedule before they get into games, or it just won't be good basketball, or it won't be good hockey, because these guys, as much as you can condition on your own, there's nothing like being in mid-season shape, and you want to see them in the best of shape when it comes to the playoffs. So we'll see. Of course, like so many other things, including reopening the economy, this all depends on so many factors that are out of our hands that we kind of just have to wait and see what happens. And one thing we won't have to wait much longer for is the NFL draft, getting started this Thursday night. They did have a mock draft earlier today, and there have been some reports out that it went well, some reports out that it did not go so well. But the way they're doing this, with every single member of each team located separately, and every member of the broadcast team, even the league commissioner, being in their own homes, or at least in someone's home, isolated from everyone else, the different, you know, it seems almost impossible for them to pull this off. But thankfully, we live in the internet age and the high bandwidth age, and most of them have these great IT departments that have put together, you know, systems for them to talk to their coaches and talk to their scouts while they talk with other teams to try to work out trades. So the mock draft today, the first report that came out is that on the very first pick held by the Cincinnati Bengals, that there was a glitch. to kick it off, and that I don't know if the wrong pick was made or if they weren't able to get their pick made, but that's not the note that you want to start this mock draft on 3 days before the actual draft, where some of these GMs are making the biggest decision of their lives, and certainly the biggest decision for the players' lives that they're drafting. But after that, apparently, John Elway, of course, the GM now for the Denver Broncos, he said that after that initial glitch, everything went smoothly. When we're looking at what's going to happen for the draft coming up, so we were talking last week that Roger Goodell, the commissioner, he's going to be making the announcement of the picks from his own basement. And you and I, Corey, we were wondering, how are people going to boo Goodell if he's locked up by himself in the basement? It turns out now there's going to be a screen of fans from each team behind Goodell as he announces the pick. So I still think, even though Goodell's, you know, trying to run away, he's locked himself in the basement, I still think that we're going to get some boos for Roger Goodell on Thursday night.
You know, that's commonplace with any commissioner in any sport, because that's where they feel the fans can let out their most frustration with any decision that they've made, especially with the NFL and everything that Roger Goodell's had to go through, whether it was Deflategate with the Patriots, whether it's, you know, the traumatic brain injury situations. But I think that he's definitely going to become accustomed, and he will give the fans an opportunity to boo him on Thursday night.
Yeah, I would say I think the Saints would be the first fans to boo Goodell, but you know, they're picking in the 20s like they seem to every season. So my money is on one of the New York teams. I think either the Giants with the fourth pick, or maybe he might make it to the Jets with the 11th pick before he gets booed. But trust me, it's coming on Thursday night. He's going to get virtually booed from people all the way across the nation. Last year, 6.1 million people tuned in to watch the NFL draft, and that's when everyone was able to, you know, go out, have drinks, do their normal Thursday night, Friday night partying. This year, with so many people cooped up in the house, that's 6.1 million. That's going to look like, you know, chump change after this. There are going to be so many people that watch this draft this week.
It is. I mean, and you look at 1 year ago, the great job that Nashville did in hosting the 2019 NFL draft, and now you take away the crowds, again, due to the pandemic that's going on and social distancing, everyone's going to be tuned in, because that you take those people who would have actually been there on site in Las Vegas, and then you take the fact that family and friends now who would have been on site as well are now going to have to tune in, because they may not be able to attend a huge gathering. I think the numbers are going to be through the roof,
yeah,
as far as in regards to watching it.
And you mentioned gambling earlier. You know, you can gamble on the NFL draft. Actually, I got a couple bets in earlier, one of them regarding where I think Tua Tagovailoa will be drafted. But I know FanDuel, you know, one of the bigger sports books now, their director said he expects 10 times as many bets on the NFL draft this year as last year's draft. And part of that is just so many people that are used to gambling on baseball or basketball or hockey this time of year, they have nothing else. They have this money burning a hole in their pockets. They're going to be making predictions on things that I don't even think some NFL GMs know what's going to happen at this point. But there's going to be a lot of money spent with the sports books on Thursday night. Speaking of Tua Tagovailoa, and I talked about the smoke screens earlier, we are like in the peak of rumor season going into the NFL draft, and we started to see it last week, and now we're seeing it even more. But they're saying that a lot of NFL teams apparently have a red flag on Tua with his medical history. Some, I think, three or four teams reported to one journalist, can't find his name right here, but that Tua was completely off of their draft board. And that's even with his agent saying that he's 100% healthy, the hip is good. We saw the pro day video that he sent out to the teams. He looked like he was moving fine. He was throwing the ball well. But you've got these NFL teams who are not just worried about the hip, which he just had the surgery on after being injured in November, but his past injuries too. You know, he had the two ankle injuries, I think one on each ankle, left foot, right foot, and he also had the broken thumb. I'm thinking that this is a lot of smoke. We're still going to see Tua drafted pretty high, but there are a lot of credible people saying they see him dropping out of the top five or top ten at this point.
I just cannot see Tua dropping out of the top ten in the NFL. You're looking at him and Henry Ruggs signed with Adidas today, so that'll be a way for them to supplement their income with contract and endorsement deals. But, I mean, for pre-draft reports to suggest that Alabama's offense, the RPO offense, hurt Tua Tagovailoa's chance of being drafted, I beg to differ, because the numbers that he put up in Alabama's offense are what makes him so intriguing as a quarterback. His accuracy, his laser precision on his throws, and he shows what type of competitor and the willingness that he has. The Wonderlic score has even been thrown in this week as one of Tua's things that would cause him to drop in the NFL draft. I don't see any of those things hurting Tua's stock in the NFL draft, and I think that if he goes beyond number five with the Miami Dolphins, something is really wrong.
Yeah, and by the way, the Wonderlic report that initially came out said Tua scored a 13. I think that was proven wrong. He scored either a 19 or a 25. He was more close to the average score for quarterbacks on the Wonderlic than the initial score that came out, that 13. And I think that's overblown also. I think if you've got a good athlete, you know, you can be football smart, and that's different than being IQ smart. But we've seen Tua. We've seen him talk for the last, what, four, going on 5 years now with the media. He is not stupid. There are some players that you can legitimately listen to in interviews or watch them interact with others, and you say, okay, thank God that guy is good at football, because if he was not on the field, he'd probably have trouble making a living. I've never gotten that from Tua Tagovailoa, and I seriously doubt that any NFL teams have either since they've been talking to him. It has more to do with his injuries and whether he's going to be able to stay out there on the field. A couple more big rumors that I saw over the weekend. Jerry Jeudy, who a lot have going as the first receiver off the board, maybe even top 10 now. Woody Page, who we've seen so often on ESPN, he of course writes with the Colorado Springs Gazette and writes about the Denver Broncos. He's hearing that Denver may trade up to maybe number 8 or number 10 in the draft and take Jeudy there in the top 10. That would be huge, especially for their quarterback Drew Lock, getting him that weapon. And then the rumor that knocked me down today, and I truly hope this doesn't happen for the rest of the league. I want this to stay competitive, but they said that the Chiefs might trade up to draft Henry Ruggs. Now, talk about an unfair offensive of weapons. If the Chiefs had Patrick Mahomes play action, and if he has time in the pocket or outside of the pocket, and you've got, by that time, Tyreek Hill could be 70 yards down the field, and if he's 70 down the field, Henry Ruggs would probably be 80 yards down the field. I mean, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah, that type of speed, you just can't coach that type of speed. And, again, you see time after time him run down after an interception. He's probably 5 yards deep in the end zone, and he turns around and makes a tackle some 65, 70 yards down the field, showing the type of speed that he does have after Tua throws an interception. But you're exactly right, Dalton. If you have an opportunity, either the question is not where or how far those guys are going to drop, but who will be the first wide receiver drafted? Mm-hmm. Will it be Henry Ruggs the third, or will it be Jerry Jeudy,
who is
probably one of the best route runners there are?
Yeah, and you got CeeDee Lamb in the mix also, and that's before you get to Jefferson and Chenault and some of these other great receivers out there. I mean, it's a class for the ages for receivers, and two Alabama guys right there at the top. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit about how Auburn is looking. And Auburn and Alabama both might set program records with the draft this weekend, or later this week. I'll tell you what those records are when we get back right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, wrapping up this Monday night's edition of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. And, Corey, we are going to have just so much to talk about next week. The post-NFL draft edition, and I can't wait to talk with Jim Nagy and get his take on what teams did or did not do well later this week, and also with the Alabama players and the Auburn players, where they end up. And it seems like every year Alabama is setting some kind of new record when it comes to the draft, and this year could be the same. Their record for most players taken in the first round for Alabama is 4 players, and Saban's been able to do that 4 separate years, 2011, 2012, 2017, and 2018. And this year, that record could fall when you start looking at the players that could go in the first round for Alabama. I mean, right off the top, you know, Tua, whether he falls out of the top 10, he is going to be a first-round pick. I feel pretty confident saying that. Jerry Jeudy, pretty confident he's going to be a first-round pick. That's two. Jedrick Wills might be the first tackle taken off the board. There's so many good offensive tackles in this draft, but he'll be a first-rounder. Xavier McKinney, his name is producing more and more buzz. I've seen some people say that he's, you know, certain to be a Pro Bowler at some point in his career, unless it goes catastrophically wrong. Henry Ruggs, that would be five, so that would set the program record if he goes in the first round. And then you add in maybe a Trevon Diggs. Maybe he's able to go in the first round. Maybe you add in, I don't know who else might get in there. Terrell Lewis, maybe he could go in the first round. You never know until Thursday night, but I do expect that to fall for Alabama. And if they get five or more, that would also set an SEC record. Alabama, Auburn, and LSU all have the current SEC record with four players drafted in the first round. And also, if Bama gets Tua drafted, Wills drafted, Ruggs, and Jeudy in the first round, they'll be the first school in over 50 years to have four offensive players selected in the first round of a single draft. So a lot on the line for Saban's program, which is something we don't have to say that often anymore.
Just continues to juice. I mean, if you want to get developed, that's the biggest thing. He develops that four- and five-star talent year in and year out, and that's what makes Alabama different.
It really is, and they have now become running back U. You look at how many running backs have been drafted out of Alabama that are doing well in the league. Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry. I mean, the list goes on and on. And then for Auburn, who they are expected to have a top 10, maybe even a top 5 pick with Derrick Brown. I've seen some analysts call him the most underrated player in this draft, and we might be talking about in the future whether he or Chase Young were the better selection in this draft. But Derrick Brown seems as certain to a sure thing as you can get. With Auburn, the most players they've had drafted in an NFL draft since they moved the draft back down to 7 rounds, the most that Auburn's had was 6 players, and they set that just last year. You had Jarrett Stidham, Jamel Dean, Darius Slayton, Deshaun Davis, and Chandler Cox. I guess that would have been 2 years ago. And Dontavius Russell also got drafted. So we could see Auburn break their own program record with most players drafted in total in the draft. With Derrick Brown, Marlon Davidson, his name keeps coming up. Noah Igbinoghene, who, you know, he was just a receiver a couple years ago and converted to cornerback. We saw what he can do with the ball in his hands when he's returning punts, but it seems like a lot of teams expect him to develop into possibly a shutdown corner. So we might see Igbinoghene in the late first round, maybe in the second round. You got the tackle, Prince Tega Wanogho, Nick Coe. He might be, you know, a second, third day kind of guy, maybe third round into the sixth round. Javaris Davis, they have him pegged anywhere from the fourth to the sixth round. Daniel Thomas, same for him. Jack Driscoll, the tackle, I've seen him go anywhere from the fourth to the sixth round. And then you got a list of guys that are, you know, likely to be undrafted free agents when all this is said and done, but could still find their way onto the draft board. So this is a huge draft, not only for Alabama, but also for Auburn. Just kind of, it shows the talent that these two schools have.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show as the reason why you're looking at the state of Alabama across the entire country as to being so successful, whether it's Alabama and Auburn, why the Iron Bowl is viewed as the best rivalry in all of college athletics. But we'll see who's going to be donning those new uniforms that the Bucks, the Falcons, the Browns, and the Patriots will be sporting next year.
All right, let's wrap up this show with predictions. And we'll only do one prediction apiece because the time is coming to an end here for this show, and of course we've got the draft coming up on Thursday. But Tua Tagovailoa, tell me what team you want him to be on, regardless of where they pick, and what team you think Tua Tagovailoa does end up on.
I think the Miami Dolphins is who I want him to go to, and I think he will go to the Miami Dolphins at number 5. Dolphins.
Okay. All right. I think for his career, I would love to see Tua go to New England. And I think Peter King earlier, he released his one mock draft that he does every year, and he had New England actually trading up to 13. He still had Tua on the board at 13, but Belichick moving up to take Tua with the 13th overall pick. I would love to see Tua go to New England. Just the storyline there with Tom Brady leaving and Tua coming in, that would be just an awesome storyline. In my opinion, I think Tua probably ends up with either the LA Chargers at 6 or the Jacksonville Jaguars at 9. That's my take. You say Miami, I say the Chargers or the Jaguars.
And all of them need a quarterback. So, I mean, you can't go wrong, and I think he would fit into any of those systems. I'm just an old-school Dan Marino Miami Dolphin fan, so I want him to be a Dolphin.
I hear you. And we'll parse this out next week. We'll do the post-NFL draft show on Sports Night. Jim Nagy will be our guest. Corey, have a good one, man.
Do the same, Dolph. Take care.
All right, coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama with Jennifer Boozer. Stay tuned.